Okay, cool. Good to have you here. Welcome, Phoebo, from the main finance team to Web3 1:1 talk show with the Dapless.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
All right, awesome. Great to have each and every one of you here joining us to talk about neutralizing market volatility with dollar cost averages. Today we have with us Phoebo from Main Finance, who will be running us through a couple of things, all of the fun stuff. But before we get into all of the nitty-gritty things that I'm excited to talk about and I'm excited to learn about, Phoebo, the floor is yours. Do you mind giving us like a quick intro about yourself, what you do, who you are in this metaverse Web3 space, and just like tell us your journey so far?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for coming here. So I'm Phoebo. I'm one of the co-founders on mainly a full stack / front-end developer for Main Finance. I've been on the crypto space. I'm actually relatively new here. I actually started directly with Main Finance. I mean, I had a few people very close to me. For example, Jet, that is our another founder. And
yeah, 10x developer Jet. Founder.
Yeah. So they actually have been on the space for, I think it's like 6 to 7 years, which is historically now for crypto to be about that much time. But I just started really with Main Finance when they actually pushed me to actually join. I had heard about it. I knew a little bit of the in and outs, but I had never actually held any type. I didn't even have a wallet. So I directly started with this. So yeah, I think that's a little bit about me. I've been working as an engineer for, I think it's already like 10 years, give or take. I work a lot on Web2 companies, doing like customer experience, user experience. I've also worked at fintechs, so I've been touching a little bit about finance. But yeah, I think that's a little bit about me.
Awesome, great to have you here. You know, you guys are Giga Chat developers over at Main Finance. I mean, Jed has, you know, years under his belt, and you, even though from like a Web2 background, I mean, come on, guys, like give us a break here. I'm just trying to like, you know, get you the ground running. And you guys have everything all figured out. It's great to have you here. You know, you say you're relatively new, but you know, it really doesn't matter. In crypto, time is very interesting. It's very interesting how time moves in this space. And, you know, considering the fact that you have active engineering experience, I'm pretty sure it wasn't that big of a deal to pick up the fundamentals as far as like developing and building for the Web3 space.
Oh, 100%. Right. Like, it was really easy to pick up it does have some technical know-hows that you need to wrap your head around, like transactions not actually being instant, or like you don't actually have backend query for. You actually just query the blockchain and everybody just says, okay,
and wait for your response.
Yes.
That's it, period. There's nothing you can do about it.
whatever is done, it's done.
Yeah, totally. Whatever is done is done. You know, there's nothing can be modified. There are no customer queries. There are no, oh, hey, you know, I want a refund. Nope, that's not happening in this space. So do you mind telling us about your experience, you know, building out, you know, the front end of the Main Finance? I'm assuming you were the front end dev or are. And if that isn't the case, could you talk about your experience working on the Main Finance protocol and with the Main Finance team?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I started working at Main pretty early on. I mean, I think Jed has talked about this a little bit, so I'm going to keep it short about the history of how Main Finance came to be, just in case there are some new people here. So Main Finance came to be from a need that Jared and Tramo had, actually. They wanted to do DCA, but they didn't want to do it centralized, like through a centralized exchange, like Binance, KuCoin, or some other that might be around there. They wanted to do it decentralized. Like, nobody has your Nobody has your wallet. It's all permissionless. Like, there are no intermediaries that can actually affect how your DCA is going. And that carried a quite big technical challenge because doing DCA, doing a tool to make DCA centralized, it's pretty easy. Like, it's just, you save up a list of what people want to buy and in which period, and you just go through that list and execute the swaps for them. That's pretty easy. Now, when you want to make a smart contract do that, that's when things get tricky, just because going through a list on a transaction on a smart contract, incredibly costly. It's not going to scale. So we had to figure out a way to say, okay, how can we make this scale? How can we make this support either 1 or 10 million positions that want to swap? And Jed and Chamo figure out a way to do position aggregations, which is the core at Mint Finance. That just started the protocol. So they started building the smart contracts. At some point, we actually know each other for a long time. And they started pushing me into like, hey, get into crypto, get into Mint Finance. We need a product developer. Both of them are smart contract developers. So they don't know about front-end, and they needed someone to build a UI. So yeah, they pushed me so hard into it that I finally gave in and said, okay, I'm going to do it. And I completely fell in love with the technology.
So Mr. Feeble, so back basically, you were telling us about your experience and how you fell in love and the transparency that is with DeFi. So do you want to
can't remember exactly where I left off, but I think that the example that I was going by is that crypto actually made me hate banks right now. When we started doing Mint Finance and I was just starting to get into the space, I was doing transactions through my wallet just to test out the Mint Finance contracts. And then I had to do an international wire transfer through the classic banking system. And I had I think it was 4 hours where I didn't know where my money had gone until it actually showed up in the next, in the actual home banking. And I was like, oh my God, we can't live like this.
that's crazy.
Yeah. So that's the little straw that said that made me see the light and say, okay, I gotta get into this. I gotta make the ecosystem better. We gotta make Mint Finance and then just start from there.
Yeah, awesome. And I think one of the things you mentioned was falling in love with the process, and I'm curious was, again, because this must have been very different from your background, from your experience, right? You said you worked with fintech rather. So you had exposure and experience to a rather different way finance is resolved and is settled. And so coming into DeFi in a much more decentralized manner, how did that affect your approach and your thinking? And how did that play out all in and of itself?
Right. So it was, I'm not going to lie, it was a bit hard at the start. I had to wrap my head around, okay, so you don't actually have a user, you just connect through your wallet. The transactions are all there for everybody to read. You just need to figure out a way into how to read them and show them to the user. There are very different flows for user coming from traditional finance into DeFi. So for example, something that would never happen to you on traditional finance is that you actually have to approve the spending of your tokens, which I think is genius for DeFi. Like, I'm just saying, you can just take this amount of this specific token that I'm giving to you. So it was hard to wrap my head around, like, okay, how can I present this to a user in a meaningful way that they can understand it? Because we didn't want to just cater to the experienced crypto users making Mean Finance. Something that I talked with the guys, I said like, hey, let's cater to retail. Let's cater to people who are just starting up on crypto. It's going to make it easier for both. But they're really, the UX of crypto right now sucks hard.
Yeah, 100%. It's absolutely true.
There are some good pointers into how to do cool stuff. Like, for example, if you go into Uniswap and you want to make a swap, it's pretty easy. It's very intuitive. Like you said, what you want to provide, what you want to get, and you either set whatever you want, how much you want to get or how much you want to provide. And it gives a really easy user flow into, okay, now you will need to approve your token. Once you approve your token, you need to actually execute the swap. You're going to see it on your wallet. They have like a little badge that shows all your recent transactions on Uniswap. So I think our first version, which was actually released on August, August 2020, it was heavily, heavily inspired by Uniswap because we all saw that, okay, this is a really cool user experience that you can follow. It's not perfect, but you really can see the influence that Uniswap has made on the space because you go into a lot of other decentralized exchanges, for example, and you see that the UX is mostly the same on every one of them, right? There hasn't been a lot of innovation around that. So one of the pain points that I see that are very, very heavy on crypto right now is cross-chain transactions. The fact that you need to change the network on your wallet to connect to a different, to make a transaction on a different chain, that sucks. Like that's not good.
It even sucks way more when it's on like the same layer, right? It's like Polygon, for example, is still built off of Ethereum. And to think that you have to swap chains to just, you know, they are like siblings, right? It's like I need to talk to your brother. He's right beside you, but I need to walk all the way like 10 miles. And then, you know, walk up to him and say, okay, you know, let's carry on this conversation. I just left off with your other brother who was, again, right beside you. You know, it's actually ridiculous.
And it's not just a UX problem. It's a technical problem, right? Because even if you go to the MetaMask documentation, like MetaMask does provide, has a cool documentation. And it tells you, like, how to handle when an account has changed through the MetaMask browser extension, how to handle how the change has changed. They literally have it on their documentation, an example code that says just when a user changes their chain on MetaMask, it's really hard to handle. Just reload the page and load everything again. I mean, that comes from the provider. That comes from directly from MetaMask saying, I try to do this because it's just hard. I think we really need to innovate in that. We have some really cool stuff incoming, little alpha, about cross-chain. Because right now, Mean Finance works like every other decentralized app where you actually need to change your chain to operate with, I don't know, if you're on Polygon, you need to change to Optimism if you want to create a position on Optimism, or even if you want to see your positions on Optimism. We want to shake the ground a little bit with that. So someone that is doing very cool stuff, for example, is Zapper. The way they actually handle, they show everything that you have, you know, your chains, they still require you to change your chain, actually, to make a transaction in either. But I think that the future of Web3 is cross-chain completely. Not having to change your wallet chain to just make a transaction on another network, that's the way to go. That's how we need to start catering to the users. Because when you just enter as a beginner, as a new coiner, you're bombarded with, okay, so there's Optimism, there's Polygonmatic, there's Arbitrum, there's Phantom, there's Tron, there's BSC. Like, even most of them have their own wallets. Like you can't use MetaMask for Solana. You can for BSC, like for the EVM chains, you can. But it's still really hard to make something that accommodates for everybody. And I think the when we started thinking about Mean Finance, we started thinking about that. Like, how can we make the UX of crypto better? How can we make things clearer for the user? Because applications are not clear on what they're doing. A lot of them, like a lot of them that talk about investing, like generating yield or liquidity pools, or I don't know, bolts from yarn, or the curve pools. You don't know what's going on under the hood there. You're just seeing an APY number, saying, okay, I'm probably going to get around this amount of money just for getting my money here. But you don't know what's going on behind that. That's a problem. We need to be clear on the users on, okay, so we're going to do this. We're going to put your money here. With your money, we're going to generate this. And we follow that motto on Mean Finance, where we try to communicate to the user, okay, so this is what's going on behind the hood. It is a it is a challenge to explain that in a way that doesn't get too technical, of course, but you just need to find the balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that was interesting that you talked about, which is what I was going to, that I was curious about, is like, who is Mean Finance built for, right? Who was it made for? Yeah. Who are these people you had in mind that, oh, okay, we're building this tool, but like we have this group of people in mind. And GD talked about it yesterday, right? You know, first off, it started with solving a local problem, a problem about your proximity from where you're at. And, you know, most of the design choices were made off of that. It's like, oh, in where we're at, most of the use of Polygon and Optimism, right? As opposed to picking Ethereum, which is like, you know, everyone else uses Ethereum. But it was interesting to know that when Mean Finance was being built and designed, these were the people that were, that you had in mind. And to that also is called entry-level crypto enthusiasts as opposed to pros. You know, it's basically built for people who have almost zero experience, you know, working with crypto, but it's getting them up to speed. So what do you have to say about that, and how did that affect, you know, a lot of the decisions you and the team made as it progressed?
So in reality, we actually built Mean Finance for us. Like, we started building Mean Finance because we wanted to do DCA and mitigate the volatility from the market. So that's how it started. Obviously, that's not just the case anymore, but it does happen a lot of the times that we're just getting together, not just to, like, I don't know, code on or do the next feature, and we start thinking about some new cool shit that we would like to see on Mean Finance. Like, okay, so we actually use it a lot, the protocol, because it does something that we want to do. So we can spot the gaps that we're missing there on UX, or the gaps that we're missing on features. So we're basically going over using the protocol and saying, oh shit, I wish I could do this. And then we build that because we think that's cool. Obviously, we try to cater the experience, as you said, to the beginners. The beginners and the medium do have more extensive docs for the hardcore expert users. But the reality is that Mean Finance, at its core, it's really simple for users to use. So it's easy for us to cater to the beginners and also to the experts, because what you want to do at the end of the day, it's really simple. I want to buy, I don't know, 10 USDC of Ethereum every day for 10 days. And it should be as simple as that. No, okay, you need to provide liquidity to this pool and do this and do that. But the reality is that the community on Mean Finance, like the one that has been appearing both on Twitter and on Discord, it's amazing the amount of ideas that people are providing. Like, we have a feedback channel on our Discord server, and it's pretty active, where people come and say, hey, I saw this, I tried Mean Finance, it's great, I wish I could do this. We go through that, we think about it and say, okay, yeah, that's a really cool idea. And a lot of the things, a lot of the features that Mean Finance has right now have actually come from a user coming into our Discord server and saying, hey, I wish I could do this. Like, for example, one of the ones that we showed was a user came and said, I wish I could see the USD value of my tokens on Binance. And we thought, like yeah, that's really cool. So now you can see your USD value of your tokens on Binance, right? That also goes into integrations. We have an integration with Zapper that we actually built based on users that wanted to see their positions there. The Cerium integration came completely organic. Like, we didn't touch any code there. It was all community driven, where they actually opened a debunked forum post. They're trying to say, like, hey, we want to see Binance here. And the whole community voted there, and it actually passed, and they made the integration. So yeah, who are we making Binance for? I think we are making Binance, obviously, for everybody. I think every type of user.
So Binance welcomes everyone. Binance, everyone is welcome to work.
Yeah, of course. I think we're going to start providing. Our V2, which is the current one, has been deployed on, started all as a beta in December. Then we deployed the full version on at the end of January. We're in July, so a very amount of time has passed by, and we are already in development and thinking about some really cool products that we can build on top of New Finance to improve the user trust. Still taking DCA at its core, but with some really cool shit around it and on top of it, that it's going to cater to all types of users. Like, beginners are going to be able to DCA. Experts are going to be able to do some really other cool stuff that might be a bit more complex for a normal or beginning user to do. But yeah, that without actually getting on alpha, I think that's about as much as I can say about that.
All right, that's cool. That's fair. That is fair. Now, we talked about Mean Finance. We've mentioned Mean Finance. We've asked what is Mean Finance and stuff. But, you know, we haven't particularly talked about what it does in and of itself in great detail. What I mean by that is, you know, DCA, which is primarily the feature as it stands at this point in time.
Yeah.
So what exactly is DCA? You know, just walk us through that process. Sure. And how does Mean Finance aim to solve the problem with about dollar cost averaging in crypto?
Sure. So DCA, which is dollar cost average, is an investment strategy that has existed for a very, very long time. Like, we didn't create DCA. Dollar cost average, so you have mainly two ways to invest in a token, for example. Let's say that you have like 1,000 USD. And you say, okay, I want to buy 1,000 USD of Ethereum. What normally you would do is, okay, I'm going to try to track when the price of Ethereum is down, so I can invest my 1,000 USDC in a smarter way, where I get more ETH for the value of my USD. I want to buy when it's low, and I want to sell when it's high. And that's basically trading, right? But the truth is that most of us suck at trading. Like, we don't know when's the bottom, when's the top. So maybe you bought Ethereum at the top and then you want to sell and you end up selling at the bottom and your profit has gone very, very low. That's what you call lump sum investment, where you get the money that you want to invest and you invest it all at once. Right. Now we go into DCA. So DCA, or dollar cost average, is something that you do through a period of time. So going to the same example, I have 1,000 USDC, but instead of investing that all at once, I want to, I don't know, buy 10 USDC every day for 100 days, and that's where I'm going to invest 1,000 USDC into Binance. Now, when I'm going to buy that, let's say that I'm going to buy that daily, I'm going to buy it at every day at the same time, no matter the price, no matter the price of a dream. If it's either lower than before or higher than before, I just buy it, like, close my eyes and say, okay, I'm going to buy it now, 10 USD every day. What that's going to make at the end of that period is that the price where you actually bought off Ethereum with those 1,000 USDC is the average price of all the little buys that you made. So in this way, you have actually decreased or mitigated the market volatility, right? Because if you bought one day and Ethereum was at, I don't know, 10K, that's cool for you. Then you bought the other day and it was 1K, and then you bought the other day and it was 5K. You're going to average all those, and that's what your final price for buying Ethereum is going to be. So that's how we actually mitigate the market volatility. It's inherent of DCA, not inherent of Mean Finance. What we do at Mean Finance is it's a protocol that automates those DCA buys for you, right? So you could manually do DCA decentralized. Like you could go every day into a DEX like Uniswap and buy 10 USDC of Ethereum. And you can do that for as much time as you like. What's the problem here? The gas, right? The gas that you pay for each of those transactions. If you make, if you want to make a DCA that lasts for 100 days, 100 times you're going to pay for gas fees. And as we know right now, on Ethereum Minute, right now it's really low, which we're all happy about. But we have a very volatile time. I don't know, I think it was like around December, where a transaction could actually cost you like $30. And if you want to do a small DCA, like buy $10 every day, you end up paying more on gas fees than you actually end up paying what you get in what you want to invest. So what we do at Mean Finance is that we automate those DCA buys for you. And in a way, we subsidize the gas costs of all those buys. So the only time that you pay gas for making a transaction at Mean Finance is when you create your position and when you want to withdraw everything that we have stocked for you. That means that if you want to create a position that lasts for 100 days, or if you want to create a position that lasts for 1,000 days, or I don't know, just one day, you're not paying gas fees for any of those trades that happen in your position. And that's the magic of it, right? That's where Mean Finance actually shines. Because we automate that buy. If you can just set it and forget it, like, okay, I'm going to set this position to buy Ethereum for 3 months every day. And I can come back at those 3 months and be sure that my position has been executed every day. And I haven't paid a dime on gas costs for making those swaps. We do charge a fee, but we charge a fee on the swap. So we don't charge fee on deposit. We don't charge fee on withdrawals. We charge a 0.6% fee every time that we make a swap for you, which still makes it cheaper than actually doing the DCA yourself. But that also means that if you started, for example, a 3 month long position, but it has gone just 1 month, but you want to get out of it, like you want to get your liquidity, both your funds and swap back, we won't charge a fee on what we haven't used for you. So you could create a position and automatically end it, and you're going to have the same balance that you had before creating that, which a lot of the applications that mostly I think it's on centralized exchanges, they charge a deposit they charge a fee on deposit. So if you want to get out early of your position, you have already paid a deposit fee, which it's not really cool. And something that we do that I think it's amazingly cool is that for being decentralized, we our motto is always, if all the founders and all the developers and everybody that writes code for Mean Finance dies tomorrow, we want the protocol to keep going. We want the protocol to keep working without the need for us to be there. And it does that. So actually,
awesome.
We don't actually execute the swap for you. It's actually an external user. We can call it a market maker, an external user with a lot of liquidity, or just someone that is doing arbitrage can come in, actually comes in and executes the swaps on Mint Finance. They do get a part of the fee, like the from the 0.6% fee that we charge, about 60% of the 0.6%, sorry, that's a lot of math, goes into that that person, and they actually get, like in quotes, a free swap because they provide that the liquidity that is missing on Mint Finance, and they get the the liquidity that we have, the extra liquidity that we have. So it's all permissionless. It's all decentralized. Like we can, all the founders can die tomorrow, and the protocol keeps working.
Does that mean most of your code and smart contract program is like all open on like Discord and people can build on top of that? Or, you know, this is strictly from a functional perspective, right? As far as functionality goes, it exists independent of you guys. And that makes sense. That is absolutely understandable. But, you know, anything concerning improvements, you know, doesn't exist once, you know, the developers aren't available to do that. So is there some form of a workaround around that, or it is strictly from a functional standpoint?
I don't know. It's actually all our code is open source. Like you can go into our GitHub and Mint Finance, and all the smart contract code is there. The front end code is also open source. So everybody can come in and actually, like, they could open a pull request if they want to add something. We're very open to that. So yeah, it's all very open. We really believe in transparency, and we wanted to show how we believe in transparency, like actually making things transparent, because just having closed source smart contracts, that seemed a little dirty. So yeah, everything is open source. You can go in and check our code, our audits. We have two audits done on Mint Finance that is also open source. You can check the audits repos there on our repo.
Awesome, cool. I mean, you know what? I mean, that's pretty impressive knowing that it can be built upon and it exists independent of your involvement or your availability of involvement is good to know. So one of the things you talked about, and I think, you know, I'm just going to reiterate, so, you know, we know that it's actually some form of a big deal, is the fact that you do not have to keep paying fees after you initiate, like, a position, when you put up a position in Mint Finance. Because one of the things about DeFi is the fees, most times. And not just the fees, the fact that you have to manually carry out these transactions and approve them, as opposed to a centralized exchange where a lot of things can be automated and you can set them and you can sort of like go to bed and or field and all of that cool stuff, like Binance, for example, which is most of what I use from a centralized standpoint, right? You can automate a decent amount of things. Well, not automate. Let's say you want to put a position for a token, but you don't want to buy at the immediate price,
right?
You just put a buy order on a particular price or a sell order at a particular price. But like on Uniswap, everything happens. You cannot, it's not obvious to me at least, that you can stake and say, okay, when Bitcoin or Ethereum hits $900, run this buy or execute this buy order. It executes the buy order in real time, the current price of Ethereum. And that involves fees. Point of all of this is to talk about the manual execution that has to do with DeFi as it currently exists in this point in time. I'm sure there are a couple protocols that are solving this problem. I haven't really looked up any, but it's impressive and it's really cool. I mean, Finance automates the gas fee manual approval process, because that just means, oh, all I need to do is take $100, select how often I want to run this, I want this code or this this position to execute, and approve the contract, sign and approve the contract. And that's it. So guys, that's actually pretty cool. It's really impressive and well done. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really the magic of it, right? Because and this I think ties up a little bit about what we talk about the UX of crypto, because it's not really that nobody's paying for those gas fees. It's just that the user that wants to DCA is not paying for those gas fees. But the gas fees are actually being paid by this third person that I talk about, the one that actually comes and executes the swaps. They actually make a transaction to execute those swaps, and they're going to be paying gas fees on those swaps. But they don't pay gas fee that is proportional to the amount of positions that we have. With the magic aggregation that we have done, I say magic because it's magic for me how they've done it and figured out a way to do it. But it's all in the code. Like, it's not just closed source and some magic that works in the background. It's there. You can see it. It doesn't matter if we have 10,000, a million positions. The protocol is going to work nonetheless. And I think we posted a bit of metrics on that on our Twitter a few times, saying like, okay, with this transaction that a swapper has executed, they've actually executed the swaps for, I think it was like 2,500 positions. And the cost of making that transaction was $2.
Yeah, like, that is
$2 quite to execute 2,500 swaps. It's unheard of on DeFi. So yeah, I think that's really cool. That's what I've said before about making the UX transparent. Like, it's happening. You just don't need to know right now. Like, the user that has a position doesn't need to know right now how that is happening in the background. But the documentation is all there. Mm-hmm. Like, you can read it. You can research it a little bit. We're very open about how that works. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. 100%. It is. You know, speaking of funds, finances, executing, and just putting money together and getting this to run. I'm curious how secure is Mean Finance, right? You know, with DeFi and with pretty much everything, you as a user, as an investor, I'm concerned what happens to my money, right? How secure is this? Is, you know, what is the possibility of an exploit happening, right? You know, well, is there some form of an insurance protecting users' funds, or has all of this been taken care of? So I'm curious, like, oh, I'm about to use Mean Finance, and you know, and we've heard of, you know, DeFi protocols that have been hacked, been exploited, you know, millions or billions of dollars have been stolen, and all of that stuff. So it's like, you know, what's the status with that as far as Mean Finance is concerned?
Yeah, so I think our primary concern has always been the security of the funds of the users, because we just want to go to sleep with an ease of mind that the protocol is as secure as it can be. The possibility of there being a hack is as minimal as it can be, right? So if we didn't feel that our protocol was secure enough, we wouldn't be able to sleep calmly. And for that, we do a lot of stuff. Yeah. So we've had two audits done on the contracts. We have, I think it's one of the most tested smart contracts that are on the ecosystem. Like, if you actually go into our repositories and you see the huge amount of tests that run for the contracts, for us to make sure that everything works correctly and there's no backdoor, no possibility of a hack, it's amazing. We also got an Immunify bounty where everybody can go review our code, and if they actually found a bug, they report it to us, we fix it, and they get compensation for that. Yeah, so the audits, we got Immunify, a whole lot of testing, and we have a very clear goal of, okay, the user funds are user funds. So I think a cool example about this that I can show you of how we actually can't touch the user funds, like from the Mean Finance, the founders, not even from our governor or whatever we have, we cannot touch the user funds in any way. And this has shown in when we had our beta version, which happened on Optimism. Then on the end of January, we released the full version, and we could have just migrated the positions from the people that were on beta to the new version, just because we said, okay, guys, thank you for testing out the beta. The swaps are not going to be executed on the beta. They're going to start executing on the main version. You can still withdraw your liquidity, withdraw your funds, you can create a new position on a new version. It would have been an awesome user experience for us to just migrate their positions to the new contract. But we were actually physically unable to touch their money. So we had to ask every user to actually migrate, for them to manually migrate their position. We did make a better UX by deploying some intermediary smart contracts that handle the closing the position on the previous version and opening one in the current, just to make the UX a little bit better. But they still had to go into Mint Finance and migrate their position, because they are the only ones that actually have custody of their funds.
All right, cool. Hear that, guys. Your funds completely secured. There's no need to fret. There's no need to be worried. The Mint Finance team, they are not so mean with everything, but they are mean with security.
Yeah, we are.
And we are all for that. Awesome. So, yes, awesome. Thank you again. Have a great, great evening, everyone. I'll see you guys next week. And peace out.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Have a good day.